Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
Hello and welcome to SciGuys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, the loving Luke Cutfer.
Hello!
This week, we're back with Luke and looking back.
Happy 2025!
Happy New Year to you too, Luke. It's so good to be back in the studio with you again.
I don't like that. Actually.
Oh, okay. I mean, here I was thinking that you enjoyed my company.
Oh, silly old Corey.
Nah.
Luke, do you have something under your chair?
No.
Are you sure?
No.
So you're not sure? So there is something under your chair?
No.
Luke, can you only say no?
Yes.
Whatever. Okay. I can definitely hear something.
Interesting.
Luke, have you trapped another seagull under your chair to try to teach it English and make it your friend again?
Yeah, obviously.
And has it worked?
No.
Why do you keep doing this?
That is my favourite bit of science.
It's not really science, though, is it? It's more animal abuse.
That specific bit of science is actually why I love science and why I got into science and why I would advocate for science.
Luke, you don't really seem like yourself today. It's almost like there's someone else in the room here with me.
No, I definitely am really here in the room with you right now, and I definitely haven't pre-recorded a bunch of phrases I think might be useful for you in the edit. I don't know why anyone would think that.
Oh, okay. I mean, if you say so. Why don't we move on?
Oh, there's nothing I want more.
This week, we're looking back at the last year of SciGuys.
What a year it's been.
You might not know this, but 2024 was quite a rocky year for me. I actually had quite a hard time.
I did know that, but it's nice to hear it again. It's just nice to hear it said, you know?
That seems a bit callous, but okay. Why don't we move on to the question? What was your favorite SciGuys moment from 2024? And let us know how your year went as well. I hope you had a good one.
If you're not a patron, I hope you had a bad year.
Yes. Okay. Well, speaking of patrons, SciGuys went on a bit of a hiatus in 2024, as many of you may have noticed.
Oh, do I want to hear more about that?
Yeah. Well, if you head over to our Patreon, you'll find a free and public post detailing the full explanation of what happened and also what the future of SciGuys will look like.
Cool.
Well, now I think it's about time we look back at our favorite moments from 2024.
Great. Let's do it.
Something I learned recently, I went to this ethical consumer conference, because of course I did, so I do in my spare time, and I learned that there's enough daylight over an hour for us to collect to power the whole world for a year. So the actual amount of resources we have to solve it are all there, and the idea that we can't use green energy is wild. That's something that's not completely related, but something that I was like, there are solutions. It's just that there's so many infuriating things to learn that I just don't understand why we're being sold that it's impossible.
Well, the one thing I would like to add on that, I'm currently reading a book called How the World Really Works, I think it's called. And it's talking about how we very much really need to do something about this. Mm. But I haven't finished it. I wish I'd finished it by now in order to be on this episode. But it talks a lot about how, like, the stuff that we get from petrochemicals are so deeply embedded in everything that it's actually way more complicated than any of the politicians who are saying, like, the solutions are all there, we just need to implement them. They either don't understand or they're lying, because, like, all of our lubricants come from like, so anything turning comes from petrochemicals, and then, like, a lot of our fertilizers come from chemicals, from petrochemicals, so from oil. And, like, I'd never quite appreciated,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, right. How deeply embedded, because we get the oil out of the ground, and, like, some of it becomes petrol or plain fuel or diesel.
Fractional distillation.
But then a bunch of the other stuff is, like, some of it becomes Lego, and then some of it becomes lubricants, and some of it becomes fertilizer, and some of it becomes all these other things, which, like, if we absolutely eradicated oil from the pipeline, like pun intended, then we'd have to either continue digging up oil in order to continue getting those things that we do still need, or find alternatives, some of which we don't have alternatives for yet. And it was just a very interesting read. Like, I really recommend it. Anyone who wants to learn more about like the realities of this, it's really interesting read. And it is scary, the magnitude of the problem we face, because ultimately the knock-on thing that will happen from the economic perspective is if we like outlawed using petrol, for example, and diesel and plain fuel coming from oil, you'd still have to dig up oil in order to make those other things if you don't have alternatives to them. Yeah. And so you'd have a surplus of a bunch of like this fuel that you're not allowed to burn, and all those other things would become more expensive because they're not being subsidized by the price of the petrol that you get to sell from the oil you've dug up.
It's a lot to absorb to say. I think what we have to absorb is that we have to rebuild everything from around 1880 onwards. Anything we've invented, we need to maybe just go back and reinvent. And we don't have 120 years or 140 years.
Yeah.
We've got maybe 10.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of innovation problems.
Like, if you function according to how capitalism models that you function, then if you were like in a nice situation where you had no reason to go and work, then you wouldn't, if you behaved according to the way that the economics sort of models your behavior.
I mean, why do you think we have homelessness? Homelessness is a political choice. The reason that we have people starving, freezing and dying on our streets is because it serves a political purpose. It serves a purpose to say, look, your life might be shit, but look, it could be worse.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what we seem to hear. So when you have people like Suella Braverman say, you know, homelessness is a lifestyle choice, it's like, no, it's not. And people will latch onto that and blame people, again, for our country's ills. You know, Jeremy Corbyn, for all his flaws, said one of the first things he would do as the Prime Minister of this country would be to end rough sleeping. And it is perfectly possible to do. We proved it during the pandemic that we could end rough sleeping. We put people in accommodation. And if you want to be an economic hard ass about it and a proper Uber capitalist, you think about how much money we spend on homeless people using public services like the NHS, for example, when they become ill. We could pretty much end that if we put them in accommodation and they weren't starving, freezing and dying on our streets. But no, it serves a political purpose.
Well, yeah, it's the carrot and the stick, isn't it?
Yeah.
The carrot is, look, you could be Elon Musk if you want. You can't, unless your father owns a diamond mine or an emerald mine or, I don't know, whatever.
Well, we have the same 24 hours in a day as Beyonce, don't remember. don't forget that.
Why do you think NASA launched? They, to be clear, they had all of the information that I have just given you, and also more, because they did not have some dumb mid to late 20s person
podcaster
reiterating, don't call me that, don't use that slur against me, you disgust me. Am I going to call you an influencer, am I? No, I wouldn't do that to you. But they don't have some idiot in his like late 20s regurgitating stuff he'd read online. They have engineers, rocket engineers, not rocket scientists, Luke, rocket engineers, the smart ones, giving them all the information they need. So why did they launch? If you were NASA and you had decided to launch, why do you think you would have made that decision?
I'm guessing, let's say they've spent a lot of money and they're like, we spent too much money, we need to get on with this.
I mean, do you know what?
And TV ratings, maybe.
Okay, yeah, okay, there you go. So it wasn't, to my knowledge, really as much about the money. I mean, yes, it's always about money, right? It's always about money. If people die and someone knew that people were going to die and they didn't do anything to stop the people from dying, probably money or racism.
Or both.
Both.
Maybe both.
Lots of them, and lots of time it's both. It's both. Yeah. Sexism too. Can't forget that.
Maybe all three.
Yeah. Homophobia.
Oh, all four.
Yeah. Let's just say bigotry as an all-encompassing money or bigotry.
Okay. Yeah, so well, I'll just speak for you. Rebecca, I've had this really interesting experience of when people are asking me how is Rebecca doing? I've been saying you've had a really easy pregnancy. And then I go, oh, hang on, that makes it sound like I'm just like saying nonsense for my wife, or I found it really easy. And I say, that's your words, right? You've said, like, compared to everything you read and compared to other people you knew, you've like been having a really like all right time, other than like you had the bits of nausea. Yeah, I'll let you talk now.
Yeah, I've been unbelievably lucky, especially energy level wise. Like I feel like my energy levels have been pretty much the same as always.
I think I forget that you're pregnant. I'm not gonna lie.
I sometimes forget that she's pregnant. I roll over and I'm like, oh yeah.
You had a birthday party the other day, and someone pointed out you were in heels the entire night, which insane.
We're 35 weeks pregnant, and you gotta, you know, keep those glutes active. no, but I have. I've been very lucky with, like I've not experienced pain. I've not. My energy levels haven't totally dipped. I feel fine. It was probably the first 3 months were probably the hardest of just like nausea, then like tooth infection, and obviously then you're worried and nervous, and it's all very new and you want things to go well. And so they were probably the hardest. And then after that, it's kind of been fine and it's been really fun.
Wow. Look at that. Get pregnant, kids. Go out there and do it. It's easy. Rebecca's.
it's also not.
So, magic mushrooms. Let's get to those. What are magic mushrooms? Noah, do you have any idea?
They make you think funny things. who knows? I don't know.
It's almost as good as pigs find them.
I think we need to, we need to release a dictionary that is just like a word and then Noah's definition of the word. What is truffle? Pigs find them.
it's like when you're asking what is the thing and Noah's giving you a list of features of the thing.
Magic mushroom, they've got psilocybin in them, so they make you hallucinate.
Psilocybin.
Yep.
Kind of like mint. Do you know mint, how you should never, ever, ever, ever plant mint in a garden?
Don't tell me what to do with my mint.
If you would like everything in your garden to be mint, then plant mint in your garden.
It does as it chooses.
Yes, that's literally what it does.
That's terrifying.
Fucking hell, my hands feel heavy.
Oh, wow. How are your hands feeling now?
My hands feel tiny.
Yeah, my hands feel so heavy and big. Like, I can't even swing them around.
I feel like my body is just like a large cloak that's been draped over some bones. I feel like I'm just like, I'm holding myself up by this one specific joint in my back. I'm like...
Can I just say, how funny would it be if we just, like, threw to Noah every now and then, like, Noah, check in, how are you doing?
Like we're throwing in for the weather.
Over to and Noah. To Noah.
No, I can't.
Cloak of skin.
I can have a normal conversation, but that is how my body feels right now.
Yeah.
Do you know what? You said that in such a way, like, almost like someone on the news, like, but that is how my body feels right now. Yep. And check on to the next segment. Yeah. So the psilocin.
Sorry, it's not funny.
Oh! Oh! Ow! Ow! So yeah, the psilocin activates the 5-HT2A receptors on sort of cells in your brain, which, as you said, they usually sort of take in serotonin, and it basically, because those are sort of like the basic computer parts of your brain, if we put it that way. Everything starts to go all wonky. So the way that you perceive time and space and see colors and things, all of that gets thrown out of whack.
Yeah.
So that's why psychedelics have such a kind of like everything effect.
Yeah. I'm starting to see some of that now, actually. Yeah.
I'm sure you are. I can see your fingers going, man.
Yeah.
But yeah, no. So they're where everything kind of gets put together in your brain, and so the binding starts to come loose just a little bit when you have psychedelics. So why don't we talk about the effects of psilocybin?
Yeah, why don't we?
Noah? Do you know about the effects of psilocybin?
It makes my hands look small. I don't know. you get weird feelings.
Don't ask me. It makes my hands look small. And so asking me questions makes my hands look small. Stop it.
Just strange body sensations.
Yeah.
That you can't quite describe unless you're feeling them.
Yeah, so you can have distorted vision, so sort of hallucinations, difference in sort of colors, patterns. You can see colors and patterns and whatnot that aren't there. You can get giggly, a sort of euphoric feeling. Time can slow down. It can speed
up. Don't
do
that.
It can slow down.
Time can slow down. It can speed up, and it can slow right.
You can get
down.
These sort of different visual things. You can have dizziness, nausea, all of these sorts of effects, right? It's very kind of all encompassing. I feel like when we talk about different drugs on the podcast, that there's very specific things that they kind of do. I mean, I think we kind of talk about how
you can understand what a neurotransmitter does based on, or what a sort of receptor for a neurotransmitter does based on what kind of drug, like what the effects of a drug are.
Yeah.
With psychedelics, it's like, man, they just hit everything, it feels like. You
just
know what I mean?
Just absolutely.
On the experiential side, on like the effects and stuff, I just want to ask, what are you experiencing right now? Like just subjectively, what's going on?
Little bit of sweat.
Oh, nice.
A little bit of, subjectively. Oh, yeah, a little bit of sweat. Body feels funny. I mean, I feel it less than I did earlier.
Can you see anything, or could you see anything?
Yeah. So like, if I look in detail on like the little log things that are on the ceiling, it feels like it has like little fingerprints.
Whoa! What about if I do this?
Yeah. So it's like
trails. It looks like my hand goes on for ages.
So I don't have that. I have it. Just feels really fluid and like nice.
So whilst you're talking, it almost looks like you're sort of I get like Aztec vibes. Like you're sort of turning into like, or like Egyptian prince vibes. Like my brain is trying to like map onto you archetypes, right? It's trying to be like, what am I looking at? I'm looking at, I guess, like,
sorry, Egyptian prince inbred and doesn't deserve the position they've got is the first thing that comes to my mind. Wow, sorry, no, carry on, Luke.
That's your self-critic. You can deal with that in therapy. But like, just I'm talking purely visually. Yeah. That's so funny.
Carry on.
But like, yeah, it's trying to map on like different archetypes onto you. Sometimes it looks like you have like multiple eyes, and the colors...
I do have multiple eyes. I have two.
What?
Mind blown.
Okay. And then the colors are a lot more vibrant. And then it almost has like a sharpening filter over everything.
Things are more in focus.
Yeah.
And why don't we talk about how it's illegal to have cannabis things?
Even hemp?
Well,
I was gonna say, I was like, because I've seen hemp.
Yeah, but like, yes. Growing.
I thought you were saying that.
No.
Illegal.
This is a fiber. This can't be illegal, right?
Yeah.
Really? Like, I mean, it can be, but it's unlikely to be. It would be weird for it to be illegal. This is a fiber. You're unlikely to get high from smoking this.
Unlikely, but
I don't think it's really possible. If I'm honest with you, Noah, I don't think it's possible to get high from smoking this fiber that I'm holding. Okay. I mean, it's like a really rough thing as well. Like, feel it. It's like rough string.
Oh, wow. But it feels really durable as well.
It is very durable. Yeah. It's a very good product.
Yeah. And we're sponsored today by hemp string.
It's not. I don't like it.
You've spent the longest of the three of us touching.
I'm trying to figure it out. I don't like it. I don't trust it.
I don't like this thing. Why don't I like this thing?
It's just a horrible texture.
It's so horrible.
It's very
dry.
It's very
dry. Yeah, it's very dry. I don't know if that's a good... I don't even know if this is hemp, to be honest. Like, they could just be lying.
Well, it says 100% it is.
So, yeah.
It says 100% handmade.
How could that possibly be wrong, then? That wouldn't make sense. Why would they lie?
Why would they lie?
Why lie? You said hemp, it's not hemp. What's wrong with you?
People can't do that.
When do you think our earliest known use of weed is? Us as a species.
Like 2000 BC.
2000 BC?
Before then.
Right.
So, well, I mean, yeah, in some cultures it's like entirely ingrained since, I don't know. 2000 BC, I have no idea the exact year. 1500 BC.
Okay, that's basically...
You versus me, let's go. Who's closer?
Over 10,000 years ago, right? So a quote here for you. Cannabis was attested to around 12,000 years ago near the Altai Mountains in Central Asia. And since then, cannabis seeds have accompanied the migration of nomadic peoples. I have to read this next quote out because it's an absolute cracker of a quote, honestly. Near the Flaming Mountains, a popular tourist spot in the Xinjiang... Oh my God, I should have read... Oh no. The Xinjiang Uyghur Autonomous Region of China, a middle-aged European-looking man was found with a large cache of cannabis. Further analysis revealed that the man had carried almost 800 grams of cultivated cannabis with a high delta-9 tetrahydrocannabinol content. Contrary to a first impression, this is not a sensational news item about an adventurous tourist facing a prison sentence far away from home, but a scholarly archaeological report about the excavation of the grave of a 45-year-old male of high social status, probably a shaman, buried around 750 BC.
Whoa.
Yeah, so that's from a paper on the history of cannabis and the endocannabinoid system. 750 BC, we found someone with 20 grams of weed preserved, right? Like, if you think, like, it's used that
think,
long.
Just think all, like, the old people nowadays being like, oh, they, well, maybe not nowadays, but, like, all these young people smoking all this weed, all this nonsense. I just, dude, like...
it's older than your civilization.
Yeah.
I just like the idea that they're, like, that person was, like, a stoner. And yeah. And if they could, had got really high and they could possibly know that we'd be, like, hundreds of years in the future talking about them having a bunch of weed and dying somewhere.
Dude, that's a, like, conversation, that's a conversation that, like, yeah, imagine all shamans, like, you know, of the past were actually just stoners. That's a conversation they would have. They'd be like, yo, dude, imagine in, like, 100,000 million years.
Some guy with a podcast.
People, like, look back on us and think we're, like, spiritual gods or something. Wouldn't that be crazy?
Like, that's great.
But no, seriously, yeah. So its use is very, 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 very long. Like, we have been using it as a species for a long time. And the weed from this story wasn't just picked wild, it was cultivated. I want to, like, stress that. They also found that the male parts had been removed, presumably because they're less potent than the female parts, and that would suggest that for millennia people have been intentionally growing cannabis for its psychoactive effects, right?
Sick.
Yeah, which, yeah, it would have initially been used for food and fibers, probably. Like, you know, the plant fibers can be used to make ropes, netting. Like, this would be a pretty good rope, be pretty good netting, right? And you can also use the seeds to make oil, as I said earlier. And then, you know, someone heats it up and it start to get a bit woozy. And before, you know, before folk realize the cause and starts, oh my God. Someone, you know, heats it up and they get a bit woozy, and then it's not long until folk realize the cause of it and start growing that plant specifically to make them feel funny, right? Like, you can see how, yes, that might...
Go past people. Have fun. That's amazing.
I would love to live in that sort of hunter-gatherer world. Like, the early world, obviously, yes. You know, like, you've got to try and survive. But every now and then you come across something,
yeah,
and you're like... oh wow, this stuff is wild.
Yeah.
I love this stuff. Like, imagine, like, just being an ancient human and stumbling across, like, magic mushrooms or something, and you take a bite and you're like, whoa, the entire world is different than I thought. I've seen God. You know?
Like, and then you have to come back and you're just now just a cave person again.
But then you're like, cool, I'm gonna find more of these, like,
these, do you know God about mushrooms. The stoned ape theory?
I think you've mentioned it before.
Well, I don't know. It's this theory that, like...
Oh, wait, early... hold on. No. Is this the Joe Rogan experience? Is that what that is?
No, what? No.
The stoned ape, right? That he's a... Oh.
He is a stoned ape. No, the theory is that, like, apes were, like, just... apes or, like, early humans were just, like, bopping around the world, and they weren't particularly, like, self-conscious. And then they ate this thing, this, like, mushroom, and that's what, like, awakened their, like... their, like, next level of consciousness, like, their next level of understanding of the world.
Yeah.
And that's the theory, is, like, that's where we get our modern way of thinking, is that these, basically, some early apes got absolutely wrecked on, like, mushrooms or weed or something.
So I've typed this in and I've looked on Wikipedia. Yeah. I love that.
Is it nonsense?
No, I love that idea.
But is it nonsense? When you say you love that idea in that way, you're saying it is nonsense.
That's so creative.
The stoned ape theory had been widely criticized by the greater scientific community. McKenna's theory was labeled as overly speculative by much of the academic community.
Yeah.
And misrepresenting the studies of psychopharmacologist Roland L. Fisher, whose research was frequently cited by McKenna as evidence for the purported effect of the mushrooms on early humans. Additionally, many pointed to groups such as the Aztecs or various Amazonian tribes whose usage of psychedelic substances does not reflect any of the evolutionary advantages that McKenna argued would emerge from using psilocybin-containing substances. To add on to prior criticisms, McKenna's claim that psilocybin intake would increase libido has been questioned, as well as the belief that an increased libido will entail an evolutionary advantage. I'm sorry.
Is this Terence McKenna?
Yeah.
Okay, well, Terence McKenna also believes that when you take certain other drugs, you, like, talk to some elves that live in a different dimension. So I can see why science doesn't love his theories.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, whether he's experiencing that or not, I don't think science is going to be like, oh, yeah, we'll just believe that. Sure.
Yeah. It's been largely rejected by the scientific community. Yeah.
That's really interesting.
Well, I'm so sorry.
I'm so sorry for basically taking this into a conspiracy podcast.
Yeah, no, so I don't know if psychedelic mushrooms did cause humanity to have consciousness. That's a wonderful... So, yeah, it's a very creative idea.
No, just monkeys, just apes. Just just apes, and that's why they're so much like us.
Oh, right. So but I was, we didn't get it.
No, we didn't get it.
Just them.
Yeah.
But I was saying, right, like, the, imagine being an early human and just stumbling across, like, you know, stumbling across some rotting fruit and being like,
that's insane,
well, I'm
it?
Really hungry, I may as well try it. And, like, imagine being starving to death and then getting drunk and you're like, this is crazy. Bro, I'm having such a giggly good time.
It's basically,
and I'm feeling full. You know?
It's basically the experience people describe when they're like, I've been abducted by aliens. It's like they don't necessarily know why, but they've suddenly had an extreme, like, basically like a psychedelic experience, assuming they haven't been stolen, and assuming they're not lying, and assuming that they haven't been stolen by aliens, then they're having a sort of hallucinogenic experience of being stolen by aliens.
Yeah,
right? And that's just a normal thing that we accept for some reason. And I don't know where this point was going.
No, I get you. But, like, imagine, like, right now, if you stumbled across a fruit. Like, you know, you were just out and you were like, oh, cool, this tree's growing fruit. I've never seen it bloom before. You're like, I'll give that a go. And you take a bite. And then suddenly you have a completely new experience of the world. Like, you've never had that before in your life. And you're like, what did that? Right? You've got to figure out what in your day caused you to have that experience. And then try it again, right? Because, like,
I'd be paranoid to eat anything because I'd probably forget that I ate whatever it was that I ate.
Why you're lucky you're not an early human. Right?
you're inferring the causality, right? You're inferring that, like, I had this experience, and so there must have been something I did which caused this experience, right? That's interesting that you can make that connection, because it's not automatic that you, like, every animal doesn't necessarily go back over their day and goes, oh, what did I do and what happened, and I'll learn from it.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's the thing. If you think that humans come across this, like, let's say after agriculture, right? You know, to the point where it's like, oh, I found this thing, and I know that if I breed these two things, like, and I take the best ones of each, it'll get better and better and better, right? What's interesting to me is just the concept of, like, you know, stumbling across a thing and then being like, what did, of all the things I did yesterday, because usually, right, with all of these sorts of things, there is a delay, right? There's, like, some time before you start to feel their effect. So it's not like you can be like, yep, it was this one thing that happened directly afterwards. I just really like the idea of being an early human and just discovering, because, I mean, sometimes, yeah, it's poison. Most times it's poison. Like, 98% of the time, it's probably poison. But sometimes...
Assuming you survive.
Yeah, if you survive the poison, sometimes it's a fun poison to survive. You know, like alcohol. That's a good time. It's a very dangerous time, and alcohol abuse should not be joked about.
Okay.
These are GnRH agonists. Do you know what GnRH might stand for?
G for gender?
Close. It's gonadotropin.
Re-inhibited. No. Just joshing with you. Just having a josh.
Gonadotropin hormone releasing hormone agonists is.
That's way worse than what I said. I think I get that one.
Give us like another minute. We would have got.
So, or gonadotropin hormone releasing hormone. Is GnRH, right?
Try saying that five times fast.
No, I don't. I don't even want to say it again. And then the A at the end is agonist. You don't need to know what any of this means.
You look like you're a real agonist trying to pronounce that word right now.
I did biotech. And here's the thing. People that do biotech, they don't talk, okay? So they don't have social skills.
Well, then shut up.
No. That's why I'm doing this. I'm the only one of us that has social skills, right? And because they don't talk, I never learned how to pronounce anything out loud because they didn't say the words out loud. They were too scared.
I was going to say, this one has social skills, but not when he's Luke.
No. I also did maths and physics, a secret side of Luke we've unlocked here.
Luke has never spoken, you, Luke, have never spoken about enjoying maths and physics. Sorry, carry on. Luke.
Never once, in fact. but we have a thing where they force everybody to do presentations because everybody's so terrible at just presenting what they know. Yeah. Nobody's good at conveying any information.
Yeah, that's why I have a job. That's why I got one, because they don't know how to talk to other people. And that's something I can do when it's...
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances. And get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save.
Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
Behind the camera? Uh-huh. Yeah, so there's a whole bunch of these puberty blockers, GnRH agonists, right? Now, they, as I said, from the 80s, you know, that's when they kind of were made. Now, 85 is when they were kind of approved by the FDA. They've been used off-label for precocious puberty since, what, anyone want to take a guess?
80s.
1981, yeah.
Exactly.
Now, precocious puberty is, you kind of went into it there, Luke. It's when, you know, a child who is before the age of puberty starts doing a puberty.
And you Noah went into that.
I think Noah did go into that.
Luke did not go. Noah went into that. Yes.
Don't give Luke any credit.
Thank you.
You guys, honestly, you just keep on yapping, and it's in one ear out the other, bouncing around. I don't know which one of you is which. Anyway,
well, there's nothing in the way between those two ears.
Ouch. Anyways, yeah. So precocious puberty. Basically, puberty will usually start between 8 and 13 in girls, 9 and 14 in boys. And when you've got precocious puberty, puberty happens earlier. It could also make you shorter because your growth plates will fuse early. You know all about that, don't you, little man?
Look, I grew a centimeter on testosterone. I don't know what you're talking about.
I don't think you did.
I know I did. I literally got it measured before and after. They measure everything.
I think I grew at least a foot on testosterone personally.
Hey, now, but that's, shut up.
But to be fair, mine kicked in a bit earlier.
So what are the status of your growth plates now?
Talk to my doctor. Talk to Luke's doctor.
I like that Luke talks about himself in the third person now.
How else is Luke supposed to talk about himself?
There are intersex people. There are trans people. Now, you could say, oh, well, is there such a 1% of... blah, blah. Shut up, man. Shut up. It doesn't matter if it's 1% of people or, you know, 50. If 1% of your population need this as part of their care, you should account for that 1%. Like, you know, how much of the population is East Asian or whatever, yeah, right? And that's still an option on all of the bloody, you know, sheets when you've got to put down your ethnicity and race and everything, right? Yeah. Like, It shouldn't matter that it's a small percentage. It's still a massive number of people.
700,000 people in the UK is 1%.
Yeah.
Like that's...
Yeah, it's...
Imagine what... that's the population of, like, some cities.
Yeah.
Or, like, bigger than most cities.
Me and all my transgender friends. 700,000 of
them. You and your little cult.
Welcome
yeah.
to Trans City.
Are we fairly certain that narcissistic personality disorder is, like, it's a disorder created by something that happens to you, or is there any suggestion that this might be sort of one strategy in life that has genetic markers? Like, because you know, we know that there might be, for example, for what's the sort of medical term for what we would call psychopath?
Oh, antisocial personality disorder.
Yeah, so we know that there would be like some, if you can sort of get away with some of the traits we would colloquially consider psychopathy, if you can get away with them, there is obvious benefit to you.
Yeah.
And then sort of the rest of the population wants to make sure you don't get away with it because we're all trying to work together. So there would be some genetic advantage to some what we might deem like personality disorders. They could be genetic strategies, which is like if you can sort of take advantage of some people, you might do better in life or life might be easier for you and you propagate your genes.
Yeah, but by that, like, you know, you could say that about a lot of different traits. Do you know what I mean? That there is some sort of, I guess, genetic benefit to them.
Like aggression, yeah.
Yeah, like aggression. Yeah, exactly what I was thinking of, yeah. And I don't know, I think it's an interesting line of thought. I don't mean to shut you down. I think it's an interesting line of thought, but I don't think it's valuable in terms of, like, the sort of world that we live in. Do you know what I mean? Right? Like, and I think it's definitely interesting. I'd love to have a chat about it. But, like, to me, it's whether something is a disorder or whether it's, you know, something that came about evolutionarily and was beneficial at some point and is now less so because of, you know, the societies that we live in and just it causing harm to other people and it being less sort of you being less able to get away with it, right? Sort of thing, right? I don't know if there is much value in that conversation when talking about NPD, because ultimately it doesn't matter the evolutionary origin to me in the sense that I find that, like, it's we like to, as people, we like to look at something that's evolved and be like, natural, therefore has value, is at the very least, like, morally neutral. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like maybe where you're coming from is kind of like, decreased stigma towards NPD? That's what I'm picking up from you. No?
No, it's not. It's not necessarily about stigma. It's more about just like, is this like pure and simple? This is a result of, for example, being neglected by your parents.
Mm.
This is the result of any person or most people when neglected by their parents. Some of them will become this thing, or is it like this is one strategy that the human race has taken, a part of the human race has taken in order to propagate their genes? Like, those are different things, and it might be sort of both. But I'm just interested as to whether it's a strategy or basically like an error. Like, when you don't get what you need, this is what happens to you.
And that's such a human question. And and I don't think there is an answer to that, in the sense that, like, biologically speaking, I just think we like to simplify things, and biology, evolution, all of that is very complex.
Yeah.
And trying to, I feel like it gets to the point of splitting hairs of like, is this sort of something that has evolved because it's beneficial, or is this just what happens when you treat people poorly? Do you know what I mean? It could be both. Like, as you're saying, it could be both. It could be neither. Like,
the sort of divide between those two might not really exist.
Yeah, and it's trying to, like, I think that trying to put a pin down like that on something evolutionary, like something that's evolved, right, on evolution in general, is like a losing battle, because, you know, it's mostly just kind of, not accidents doesn't even fit, right? Because accident still implies there is the capacity for intent.
Mm-hmm.
It just is. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's an interesting line of thought. I'd struggle to give a remotely satisfying answer, because ultimately biology is just too complex. You may have seen headlines, you know, in 2024, this year, as we are recording it, talking about bisexuals being risky, or genes linked to bisexual behavior also being linked to risky behavior. Have you heard anything about that at all?
No, I don't read headlines. I just read the articles. It's really confusing.
That makes sense. Yeah, I only read headlines. Everything is terrible. Have
it's
you noticed
horrendous.
That?
It's just, I feel like I'm missing context. I'm missing the bigger picture. And I just... Listen, everything below the byline, and then I'm there, but it's just so confusing.
It's hard to tie it together, right? See, I'm having the opposite situation, wherein I have no idea what's going on.
Oh,
all I know is that I should feel lots of things all at once, and they're all very conflicting.
Are you sure you're not just going through puberty?
Oh, maybe that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's always puberty. Like, whenever I think, like, am
this
I
is
hungry?
What, number four?
It's just puberty. Yeah. Do you not go through puberty multiple times?
Yeah, it's like an oscillation, backwards and forwards. Yeah.
I did biology. Now, would you like to know what the question is?
Hit me.
You're a bit too far away for that, but here's the question. It is, are you bisexual?
Am I bisexual? I think I need a BuzzFeed quiz to tell me.
Ethan, I don't know if BuzzFeed quizzes are something that all of our audience will understand. Can you give a Gen Z alternative to BuzzFeed quiz, please?
Yeah, okay. It's like if... comment sections were like official. No, that doesn't work.
I cannot argue with that in any way.
It's just, it's a lawless land. Anything goes, but just with an extra dose of cringe.
I mean, yeah, you could put anything on BuzzFeed so long as it's in listicle form.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Listicle or quiz. Those are the two things that BuzzFeed gave to society.
Exactly, yeah. Thank you, BuzzFeed.
And you can find out which of those genders you are with a BuzzFeed quiz. And find out which of them is the best with a BuzzFeed listicle. This episode of SciGuys, not brought to you by BuzzFeed, because does it even exist anymore?
No.
Thank God.
Rest in peace.
So obviously we're talking about risky bisexuals, as you've probably seen from the title of this episode. Now, what is a bisexual? That's what I want to dig into first. Not a bisexual, but the answer to the question that I have just posed. So Ethan, I present to you a question second. What is a bisexual?
I guess it depends on the individual. I think there are two. No, okay.
Woke nonsense. back in my day, you only had straight, gay, bi, trans, pan. I am not very old, so all of these things existed.
This plus, yeah. Okay, so the classic.
This is a bisexual episode. The classic. The two that you...
The classic is being attracted to men and women.
Oh,
the classic.
Oh, I'm calling the woke police. Wee woo, wee woo. Do you want to tell me what's wrong with that classic answer?
Well, that does quite imply that that it is a two, and that there is a binary, and that is the only definition of gender and sexuality. But in fact, I think there are many. I think a lot of people would use being attracted to gender identities. Kind of, some people use it kind of any gender identity. Some people use it as their own and another.
Yeah.
It depends on the individual and how they like to identify with the term.
Yeah, so bisexual is one of those buzzwords that means very little. No, I'm joking. Yeah. No, so you're so right. You kind of walked us through everything there. I guess initially in the public consciousness, it was kind of seen as man and woman, but that makes sense when the public only really recognizes man and woman as, you know,
man and woman. You are saying
as genders that exist. But yeah, I think same and other, your own and other genders is kind of the more accepted definition. I've got one from Stonewall here. Do you know what Stonewall is?
Yes. People died, I heard.
So Stonewall, the charity, not the bar.
Got it.
Or
okay.
The name of the event that happened at that bar.
No. Yes, definitely. That's what I meant. People died.
I mean, people, yes, that is what people, like, if there is one thing you can trust a people to do, it is die.
People be dying.
Most people, are dead. Like, think about that for, oh, we're becoming one of those podcasts, but bro, you know, just think about that for a second, right? Like,
isn't that
most
just
people
mad?
Alive today are dead.
Whoa.
It's crazy, right?
That's crazy.
No, past the no, so Stonewall, it's a charity.
Is that where we came?
Oh, wow, full circle.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
Stonewall is a charity named for the Stonewall Inn and the Stonewall sort of riot uprising that took place. It's an LGBT charity. Yeah. That was the answer that I was looking for.
Okay. I was so close.
Mm.
People died.
You were a stone's throw away. So Stonewall say, bi is an umbrella term used to describe romantic and or sexual attraction towards more than one gender. Bi people may describe themselves using one or more of a wider variety of terms, including, but not limited to, bisexual, pan, queer.
Beautiful. Easy.
Also
right?
Words that I would use to describe myself.
Yeah, and bisexuals in general, right?
Okay, that's maybe a step too far.
Okay.
True in my experience, but hey.
I would like to issue an apology to the bisexual community for implying that you're all beautiful.
You know that's not the bit that people had. You know, okay, come on.
I'm sorry.
Look, Ethan, you've not been on YouTube for very long, but I can tell you this, you're not going to enjoy doing your first apology, okay? That plain white lighting is not going to make you look good. That big sigh you've got to do over and over again till you get it just right, that's going to take the breath out of you, okay?
I can cry on cue, though. And I'm not going to prove it.
Oh, don't worry. I'll make sure you prove it before this episode.
Oh, God. Okay.
No. So I have another question for you. I'm going to have lots of questions for you because I didn't do very much. Because...
What is this interrogation? The bright lights, the cameras, the microphones. What are you doing?
It's called a podcast.
Oh,
it's where we talk and we assume people listen, but really we have no way of knowing if that's the case.
No.
But we still get to feel good about ourselves.
Yay.
Which is the main thing. So the question I have for you is how many people are bi?
Ooh.
Not approximate, no rounding. Give me the exact number.
On a census? Is that the vibe we're going
for? I don't care how many senses you're talking about. Seeing, sound, touch, whatever. Just tell me the number.
I'm going to go with 4%. Yeah.
That's not a number. Give me an exact number.
I would...
Looking for an integer.
Somewhere between 1 and 7 billion. I am going to go with, let's do the quick maths here. 280 million? No, that's 7 billion. 320 million?
I have no idea. So the percentage from the Office of National Statistics in the UK, the ONS, in 2017, they estimated that 2% of the population...
Only 2?
Hear me out.
Sorry.
16 or over in the UK identified as LGB. So that's not even bisexual. That's LG and B. And whenever I'm talking about the ONS, if I'm ever talking about the ONS, and this applies now and forevermore, it's almost certainly people in the UK aged 16 and above, unless otherwise stated, because that's what you get on a census, right? Yep. That's what you get on a census. It's 16 and up. But when it comes to specifically bisexuals, right, that would be 0.7%. So 2% are LGB, 0.7% are bisexual. So it would be 385,000 people in the UK as bisexual. But Stonewall themselves say that sounds like an underestimate. And I think that's an underestimate too, because if I look at just my social circle, I would say it's easily about 80%.
I do feel like attracts like in that sort of situation, though.
But with bisexual, like also attracts not like, which is the key point.
That's true. That's so true. Yeah. They're just everything all the time.
No, yeah. So as I said, the ONS estimated that in 2017, only 0.7% of people in the UK were bi. But that doesn't seem to be the case anymore, because, oh boy, the gays be gayin'.
It's catching. It's catching.
It's almost as though it's contagious. It isn't, but it's nice to think that way. It's not nice to think that way. I'm just saying things at this point. No, so we've seen a steady increase in the LGB population, which is good, I think, and probably not indicative of more people suddenly spontaneously becoming gay. What would you say might have an effect on more people saying to other people that they are not straight?
Well, I think maybe a big factor in people saying that they're not straight to more people is that people then won't kill them, or at least it's more socially acceptable, and there is less resistance.
Are you telling me people are murdering straight people?
I'm just saying no. I'm saying
that's what it sounds like.
Quite the opposite. No. People died.
Is that the through line of this episode?
It's really not going to be. I'm not going to make that happen.
I mean, it's happening already.
It's happening already. I'm sorry. But no, I think just a more accepting environment socially. That's going to allow for it, right?
So it's not TikTok or woke. Or
it could well be.
Okay.
TikTok is a society of its own.
Okay, well, you can say that people are becoming more open about being LGB because of a more accepting society that can be seen in data and studies. And I'm saying it's because of woke and TikTok. So
got it. Okay,
I guess
that's
the future
fine.
Will tell who was right.
And it will be you.
Obviously. What's the deal with the breast milk?
It's
a baby Seinfeld doing his airplane routine.
Hey guys,
what is breast milk?
What's the deal?
No, but what is the deal with breast milk? Let me know.
It's juice from nips. It's the good stuff. It's the nectar, the sweet goodness of life and nutrition and hydration, all from a little natural pump.
Yeah, I think what you're saying, if I were to rephrase it for you.
And I don't think you need to.
I think
was perfectly succinct.
I'm going to. Breast milk provides ideal nutrition for infant with vitamins, proteins, and fats that are more easily digested than formula. Okay, that's a key thing to note. It's got white blood cells, antibodies from the mum, and it helps babies fight off viruses and bacteria within their own little baby bodies.
That's exactly what I said. Thank you.
It is. I just put it in a way that makes
you use more boring words.
Okay, fine. What are the benefits of breastfeeding to the baby?
Sucking on them titties.
Okay, I feel as though if I ask you a question, you're not going to answer it. So I may ask you fewer questions.
I think, no, I'm serious. It is, hydration, nutrition, and just generally to keep them alive.
Yeah.
Typically.
I mean, feeding things will often
do
a little bit to keep them alive. Yeah. But more than that, it also lowers risk of asthma, allergies, ear infections, respiratory illness, bouts of diarrhea, and the risks of diabetes and obesity.
I mean, I thought I was breastfed until this moment, but that's just a checklist for me.
Yeah. Oh, you've got all of them things. Yeah.
Every single one.
Yeah. I mean, I've got the really bad allergies. I wasn't breastfed.
No.
Yeah. I ain't never sucked on a nip, unfortunately.
At least not as a child.
But, okay. Right. That's none of your business. Okay. What we do in the privacy of our own studio is none of your business, even though you're involved. But yeah, more than just all of those sort of like health benefits, it's also kind of on tap, essentially, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the baby can eat
on draft
whenever it wants.
Yeah,
yeah, the baby can eat whenever it wants. It also builds an emotional bond between you and the baby if you are the one that's breastfeeding, not if you're just, you know,
watching it happen or in some way unrelated to the breastfeeding. I mean, specifically.
I think it could.
No, because the baby, when it's born, probably wouldn't be able to see you if you're standing too far away.
No, true. But there's a communal bonding experience on looking at a woman breastfeeding in a restaurant and shaming her. Right?
Moving on. you know that breast milk, it kind of adapts, right? It's not like a sort of
it's
one
walking.
And done.
It's a, like an X-Man.
That evolves. They evolve. That's what that's they evolved.
Which is adaptation? You mean it can become like thicker and creamier? Can it go from like skimmed to whole in one? Like, does the areola turn okay. from red to blue?
No.
I mean, it might turn from blue to red, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, if they're sucking too hard, it might change to a different yeah. color. But no, what I mean is that green. The nutritional makeup will change for, you know, the baby's needs as it grows. So as your baby kind of gets older, your breast milk isn't going to be the same as it was when it was born. In fact, like, when breast milk first comes out, do you know what it's called? Like, the first sort of bit of breast milk you express?
Like a little dribble.
It's called colostrum. But it's, huh. yeah, it's, like, thick and sort of white, and it's different in qualities.
Like
to,
clotted cream.
You know what? Sure, I guess.
Now,
if
my question is, do you put the jam on before or after on your scones?
I would say after 6 months, which is roughly when you could start introducing solids.
Smooth.
Yeah, thank yeah. you. And on top of that, yeah, you know, you want to start introducing solids after about 6 months, but you can continue breastfeeding for as long as you and your baby need it.
And way beyond that as well, I'm sure.
Well, I mean, yeah, no, you like technically, I mean, I suppose if you are trying to express milk, you continue stimulating the breast. You could, I guess, conceivably just continue to produce milk. For as long as you want.
Yeah.
If you want to make ice cream out of it or something,
which
yes, someone has done. With whose milk?
I once came into the office and I looked
I like
in
the
fridge before.
I don't like the start of this story already.
I went into the office and I was making myself a coffee and I looked in the office fridge door. And, you know, we're a very modern office. We have a lot of milks. And so I'm an oat milk sort of guy. And I went to grab the oat milk and you could see the row of them. You had your oat milk, you had your almond milk, you had your skimmed, you had your organic semi-skimmed. And then a bottle of expressed breast milk was in the fridge door, which is wrong for so many reasons, primarily because you shouldn't keep milk in the fridge door because it keeps it at an unstable temperature.
Yeah, I'm sure that is...
that's the main thing that's wrong
that's
with that.
That's the main concern.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, no, it's fine keeping breast milk in a communal fridge. That's
and it foams up
fine.
Really, really well.
See, now I'm worried that you might have actually accidentally...
Accidentally is not the word you're looking for.
We're going to discuss this afterwards because I feel this is a true story. And I also feel I know whose breast milk it is, which makes me even more uncomfortable. So
keep on guessing.
Okay. I'm glad that we've done this. A little aside that no one else can enjoy. There are loads of these from 2021, by the way. If you want a DTran study, I mean, I was looking at another study that looked at a bunch of them, and I think they said about over 30% of them were from 2021 exclusively.
People were getting busy during COVID.
I have a minor theory as to why that is, though.
Yeah, why?
Oh, yeah, go for it.
I think the pandemic actually did trigger a lot of, like, start of detransitions for people because rather than being, like, living in your social gender, you were isolated at home, so then you were no longer performing gender outside. So then, I guess, for a lot of people, we got to the real reasons as to why we transitioned in the first place, because I remember I really started playing with gender around the time of the pandemic when I was just stuck at home. I grew my hair out, I dyed it crazy colors, I stopped caring about pronouns. That all happened around the same time. And when I talk to other D-trans people, I noticed that they have very similar experiences in realizing, like, oh, maybe there's something else going on.
That makes a lot of sense. I feel like a lot of people, when they spend a lot of time at home, I feel like during the pandemic, like I went through like a phase where I just listened to all my old favorite songs, my favorite old albums, got back into old stuff that I was really interested in as a kid. And I guess like when there's nobody really watching you, it would make sense that people are more comfortable to do that.
Sorry, it sounds like you've just related. I got back into my old songs. Like, yeah, I got back into my old gender.
No,
you know?
I'm just saying,
like,
that
just
like
the nostalgia.
When there's a lot of time, you can think about whatever you think about without worrying about what other people think about.
Some people became emos again. Some people became girls again.
It happened. Love it that. Happened. I do have a question for you, right? We've already kind of discussed that, you know, using detransition rates alone is not a good way to understand trans people, detransition, transition, any of that. It's too widespread. The groups are not necessarily sort of homogenous. We can't get much from just looking at a detransition rate alone, even if we can get a sort of easy single number for detransition rates. So can you think of any better metrics to understand the effectiveness or benefits of transition, since that's what people, you know, who use detransition rates to understand things, that's what they're trying to get at generally?
I think that the main thing that we need to do is have more qualitative understanding. So people speaking out about their experiences. So what I try to do with my content, basically talking about the struggles that I face as a detrans woman, the alienation that I experience on both sides of the spectrum of both cis and trans people, and also just being frank and honest and showing that a detransition life is not necessarily a bad thing. Because what I've noticed the most is that the struggles come into play when detransitioners and detrans people are not supported adequately. So in my specific case, I've been incredibly fortunate to have a friend group. My family is very, very accepting. They're very like, oh, we do not care about what your gender presentation is. So long as you are happy, it does not matter to us what you do. And I think that, along with the time that I've spent in this body, has led me to be very accepting of it. I've lived in my transitioned body for so long that I actually do not know any other body. So it's like time heals all wounds, and that vitriolic hatred that someone might feel initially when they realize, like, oh, I need to detransition, and then perhaps they've just had a mastectomy or something like that, that can be tempered with adequate support. I think that's the main thing that we need to do.
I love that. I feel like we also have like a tendency to see trans people or detrans people like as like a monolith, where like you hear that label, you hear that word, you automatically assume everything about them. Like I have people commenting on my videos like, oh, so you think that like you should, trans people, you want to force me to sleep with you? Like, even just like that assumption is so common. So I feel like absolutely like qualitative studies make sense, like actually listening to detrans people rather than just assuming what they think and assuming what their experience is probably the most important thing into understanding.
Groundbreaking, yeah. Yeah. No. I'm not making fun of you there, but like, no, yeah. Absolutely, listening to these people. And, you know, you brought up Kinnan McKinnon earlier, Lucy, and there is a study that Kinnan has done, or there is a paper I've got from Kinnan McKinnon here, Detransition Needs Further Understanding, Not Controversy. And quite literally, it just goes into sort of a lot of these elements of the sort of the care that people who have detransitioned need, and how those sort of care needs are wide ranging. You know, there are people who like see it as an important part of their journey. There are people who feel grief for, you know, like over transitioning and then detransitioning. There are loads of different experiences there that need to be sort of met and aided in a way, right? And if I could just quickly move back to talking about trans people momentarily, right? And again, I really don't like having to talk about sort of transness so much in this conversation and pull it away from a detransition. But I think, unfortunately, the way that the sort of public conversation of this has gone, it's almost necessary to bring these things up, right? Because if you use detransitioners as a sort of, as I've said many times, silver bullet, right? The 2022 transgender survey, you know, the one where we've got, you know, some information on people who have detransitioned from the 2015 version, the 2022 detransition, the 2022 detransition survey, no, the 2022 transgender survey in the US, they showed 94% positive feelings towards, or satisfaction towards transition, 98% satisfaction for hormone treatment, 97% satisfaction with surgery, right? So the reason I'm saying this is to anyone who's listening, who is, you know, sort of, let's say,
you know, one of them trans activists, like little no offense over here, you know, people who have detransitioned aren't a threat to you, right? Detransition rates aren't a threat to you. We've already got like pretty overwhelming data that transition is, you know, good for people that it's good for. The fact that, you know, transition doesn't necessarily help everyone does not mean that, you know, we shouldn't have that we should limit access to transition. In fact, I kind of want to draw a sort of similarity here between the experience of sort of people who have transitioned and people who have detransitioned, in that, like, when I'm listening to a lot of the stuff that you're saying, Lucy, I see a lot of similar things to trans people talking about their experiences, right? Like, you know, my nuclear sort of trans take that I've said in an episode before was, you know, if you're a TERF and you're saying that these detransition rates are the reason that we need to sort of halt transition for everyone, that doesn't really make sense until you get to a point where it's like 50-50 or more, because ultimately, a lot of the experiences of people who have detransitioned are pretty similar to gender dysphoria in the first instance, right? Like, obviously, there are loads of differences, but the similarities there lie in, you know, well, my body isn't necessarily the way that I'd want or expect it to be, or I'm going to have these difficulties in, you know, in these areas of life, right? Like, when you focus on the needs of detrans people over trans people, you end up just creating a group that have got, you know, gender dysphoria that is sort of harming their life, right? And when you flip it around and do the opposite, you're going to do the same thing, but just to a different group of people.
Yeah,
right?
I think we just need to care about all people and their needs.
What?
I think there's. I mean, it's easy even for like cis people to ignore the needs of trans people, let alone detrans people. But yeah, I think it's definitely something that just like, it's not. We're not doing a good job of it right now.
Yeah, I mean, the point is that it's the same fight in the same way that, you know, LGBTQ people are all sort of lumped in together. Yeah, the struggles of gay people aren't one-to-one with the struggles of bisexual people. They're not one-to-one with the struggles of trans people. But we all come together because there are shared struggles, and joining together helps. And, oh, Lucy, you look like you've got something to say on that.
Absolutely have something to say about that. Because I've had people come up to me and online, they've come up to me. And they've said, no, once you've detransitioned, you're no longer part of the queer community. You're not allowed to call yourself LGBTQ anymore. And it's like,
shut up.
I'm sorry, I have a gender diverse experience. When you say LGBTQ plus, what do you think that plus is supposed to include?
It's just there for fun.
Look, I'm not asking to insert a D anywhere there. That sounded that sounded wrong.
Sorry. Continue.
Look, I'm not asking to add another letter to the alphabet mafia. I'm content being part of the plus, but I would really like to be included in that plus, you know? I don't think that's wrong. Like I've said a few times before already, my experiences are parallel to that of trans women. And I'm not trying to co-opt trans women experiences, but like, I understand the struggles of having to voice train. I understand undergoing laser hair removal. I understand that. But at the same time, I also understand what it's like to bind, get top surgery, take testosterone, experience hot flashes when you don't have any hormones. Like, I know what that feels like, all of those things. So why am I not queer?
You're like the Avatar, you know, master of all elements, master of all trans experiences. I know them all. I've felt them all. And
I'm the last gender bender.
Well, that is all from us. But before we go, we'd like to thank all of our patrons, with an extra special thank you to executive producers Revlunar and Glitch Rabbit. And thank you for listening. You can find the full references for this episode down in the description. Subscribe for new episodes every Monday. And why not leave us a nice wee review? You can support the pod at patreon.com/SciGuys. Or you can find and contact us at SciGuysPod on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and at SciGuys on TikTok too. Or you can send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
That's SciGuysPod@gmail.com. SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
You can follow me at NotCorey everywhere.
You can follow me at LukeCutforth everywhere.
Bye.
Bye.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating.
Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances. And get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.